Welcome to the Marxist School of Sacramento. Thanks very much for coming out tonight. We're very happy to have you all here. We're returning to the Sierra 2 Center where our life began about 12 years ago. But thanks very much for coming out tonight. We're very pleased to have as our guest tonight, as our presenters tonight, Matt Callahan, who is an author, editor, and a musician, and Yvonne Moore, who's a musician. They are going to discuss and present collections of songs from the James Connolly Songbook, published by PM Press, which is available tonight in the back here from Master of PM Press himself, Ramsey Kanaan. Just a bit of housekeeping. The restrooms are behind us, all the way down the hall. So, if you have a cell phone, please mute it. Of course, I haven't muted mine, but I can give good advice. Okay. As always, we'll go for about an hour. We'll take a break, and then we'll resume after our break for a Q&A or maybe more music. Who knows? Without any further ado, I'd like to introduce, welcome Yvonne Moore and Matt Kelly.
I'm going to begin by talking a little bit about this project. The James Connolly Songs of Freedom is a project which includes a book and a CD. And before going into an explanation of how the project actually came to be and what it is, I want to say something about who James Connolly is, because I can't assume that everybody here knows who he is, or if you've heard his name, what his significance is. Connolly was born in Edinburgh, Scotland, in 1848, and he was executed by the British for his role in the Easter Rising of 1916. So in his 48 years, he began as a labor organizer in Edinburgh, inspired by socialism in various different forms. He studied Marxism in particular and became a revolutionary socialist internationalist, at which time he was actually recruited to go to Ireland, where his parents were from. He was Irish, of Irish descent, and take up a position organizing workers there. He was like paid something like a shilling or a pound a week or something, like some ridiculously low salary, to go and organize the workers in Ireland. At that time, he became much more active in the actual, you might say, what we would call today the national liberation struggle of the Irish people, and began to develop what became the Irish Socialist Republican Party, which was a very important step, even though it was a very small party. It was a very important step in the development of socialism in Ireland. It was really the first serious effort to organize a political party along socialist lines. I'll come to a little bit later what the ISRP stood for, and particularly the program that Connolly wrote in 1896, because that program is absolutely applicable to today, and it certainly articulates the kind of socialism that he and his comrades envisioned. At that time, he went to the United States. Not long after that, in 1902, he had written a couple of books, one that gained some notoriety in the United States, Labor and Irish History. So he was actually invited to come, and he gave a speaking tour in 1902. And on that tour, he went from New York to Chicago, San Francisco, all over the country. He was, in that sense, a well-known figure in revolutionary socialist circles. Then he returned to the United States in 1903, actually to live, partly because he was I think too notorious to find any kind of paid employment in what at that time was the United Kingdom. And so he was actually seeking employment. but also he wanted to go to the United States as a revolutionary leader. He joined the Industrial Workers of the World. He was in the SLP, the Socialist Labor Party, although he had a major falling out with De Leon, who was the chairman of that party. And that whole, you might say, that dispute was a forerunner of many of the ideas that Connolly himself, I would say, creatively developed in the development of Marxism. The other area in which he played a crucial role was, in fact, the development of the idea of national liberation struggles at a time when, in the run-up to World War I, the split that took place in the Socialist International was precisely along these lines. And Connolly was on the side of the, what you would say, or the revolutionary side that wanted to have the entire Socialist International oppose the war, the imperialist war, and stand against their own national governments. And for Connolly, of course, that was a very important point because he was also articulating the demands of Irish independence at the same time. And this was a very advanced position, not shared by many in the Socialist International, or for that matter in England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, because in many cases his comrades in the labor movement actually thought that the Irish question should be submerged within the struggle of workers against the bosses. Simple class analysis or class struggle. And Connolly, in a certain prescient way, articulated the position that the class struggle and the national struggle were one, and that the struggle of the Irish people should be led by the working class and be directed against the British imperialists, and furthermore that the best chance that the Irish people had to gain independence was when Britain was at war. And this was the reason why his strategy demanded that the rising, the East, what became known as the Easter Rising, be carried out. That's who Connolly was. But Connolly was much more than that, and now I'm going to tell you why we got into this project, and you'll see the other side of Connolly's role. I was born July 14th, 1951, and for my 60th birthday, I wanted to have a party and sing revolutionary songs. July 14th, as you know, is the inaugural battle of the French Revolution. But since many of my friends were Irish, I thought we could sing Irish revolutionary songs. And quickly beginning to assemble the repertoire, myself and a couple of my Irish colleagues focused on the figure of James Connolly. Part of the reason for that was because we were aware of his significance in the sense that I just described it, but also that he was known among certain people, particularly certain Irish musicians, as having actually written songs. And actually, some of these songs were not necessarily well-known as songs, but they were well-known as lyrics or well-known as titles, or certain phrases or lines from these songs had become, were in circulation even to this day amongst Irish people. And I began a search, because I remembered from my own childhood and my growing up in Berkeley, that at the Starry Plough, on the wall of the Starry Plough, there's this statement from Songs of Freedom by James Connolly about the necessity of any revolutionary movement worthy of the name would have to have revolutionary songs. The direct quote is in the book, but the point is the significance of the poetic expression of the working class is so important that this quotation, which came from Songs of Freedom, is on the wall of the Starry Plough, and I remembered that. But I'd never seen the book, The Songs of Freedom, and so I thought, well, if we're going to find some of his texts, we're going to have to do a search. So I started an internet search, looking around, talking wherever I could, finally found a bookseller in County Mayo in Ireland who said, you're not going to find this book, because there's only one copy in the world, and it's in the Dublin in Dublin in the National Library. So I said, "So, but I need these songs now." He said, "Well, I have something else for you. I have something that you can use. It's called the James Connolly Songbook." And I said, "Okay, fine. Where do I get that?" And he said, "Well, I'll try to find it. It's out of print, but it does exist because it was published in 1972." And so he finally located one for me in London, as a matter of fact, and I bought it, and I got this little thin chapbook, stapled book, James Connolly Songbook, and my friends and I started looking through the songs, and some of them had to the tune of or the air such and such, Clare's Dragoons or what have you. But most of them actually were not, there was no musical indication at all. The only thing we had to go on was that in the introduction to this this songbook, there were sort of instructions from the Cork Workers Club, who had actually put this out, which encouraged people, workers, songwriters, whatever, to take up these lyrics and put their own music to it. Because, you know, in the passage of time, songs that were written in 1903 to a kind of tune or popular song that was popular then might not be interesting now on a musical level. So we just said, all right, the rules are out, forget the tradition, just get music that can make these songs be sung. Because time was wasting, we wanted to put together a band and perform it at my birthday, and we wanted to feature at least a high percentage of lyrics by James Connolly. So we succeeded in getting this repertoire together. The party was a rousing success, and afterwards the Irish musicians in particular said, "We've got to put this out. We have to bring this out somehow because of the dire situation faced by the Irish people, not to mention all the other people in Europe and the rest of the world who were suffering the calamities of capitalism." It was specific to the Irish situation simply because at official estimates of 40,000, 50,000 a year emigrating, the future of the country leaving the country again, which has been the history of Ireland for so long. Anyway, we decided, okay, this is good, but we need to do more than just record these songs. We have to do a bit of research, find out where does this actually fit? I mean, who are we? It was just my birthday party. It was just a good reason to celebrate something, but now it becomes a serious thing. So I did go to Ireland, to the National Library in Dublin, and saw the book. They brought it out for me. It was, you know, in a box, you know, and it's air sealed or something like that. In any case, when I read it, I realized this is incredible, because first of all, the quotation that's on the wall of the Starry Plough is there, but that's less than half of the actual introduction to the book. What I discovered in the book was that this songbook was actually published in America in 1907. It was dedicated to the American working class. It never even appeared in Ireland. And that, in fact, the way in which Connolly assembled the text was precisely as a means of, as he put it, to contribute to the socialist poetry of the world. And that it was an Irish, it came from an Irish perspective. They were all Irish poets or lyricists or songwriters, but it was their contribution to the world, the international struggle. At every point he was emphasizing the international aspect. And in fact, the other dimension of this that you know comes out in through the in our version of Songs of Freedom was that it was quite clear that Connolly's emphasis on music was in part a result of the multilingual and multinational working class he encountered in New York, for example, or in the United States. People did not even share the same language. Italian, Yiddish, Finn, Swedish, all were being spoken in the working class in the United States. And one of the ways of people joining together in solidarity was through music and was through sharing of songs. So anyway, we had this new view of the song of the original Songs of Freedom. We were able to photograph it just roughly so that we could actually look at the book. And in the process I came to San Francisco, spoke to some people doing fundraising, trying to raise the profile of the project and also the means to make it happen. And in the course of that, met with someone in San Francisco who put me in touch with a guy named Jim Lane in Cork, Ireland, who it turns out was the guy who not only put out James Connolly, the James Connolly songbook of which we were drawing from, but had written the introduction. And he said, well, this is a great project. I talked to him on the phone, but I have something else you have to see. And I said, what's that? He said, well, I have this 1919 souvenir program which has lain in, the cupboard over here for 100 years. And or almost 100 years. And so he scanned these copies and sent this to me, and as soon as I saw it, I realized this has to be part of this book. This is an amazing document. No one's seen the thing for almost 100 years. It's a souvenir program of an event that was held in Dublin in 1919 to commemorate the birth of James Connolly. Now remember, after the Easter Rising, which was brutally suppressed by the British, of course, the war did not stop in the sense of the Irish struggle for independence. And so by 1919, the British still ruled Ireland, undoubtedly, but the Civil War had begun, and there was already a battle going on over home rule and the various different factions and parties in Ireland were struggling over what the future of the struggle was going to be. And in this context, having this concert to commemorate Connolly's birthday was a highly controversial thing. In fact, it was attacked by the British under the Domain of the Realm Act, and it was resisted by the ICA, the Irish Citizen Army, or was protected by them, who actually stood guard while the concert was being held inside. And this program contains, what the songs were, actually the music, although it's not in, as you'll see if you read the book, it's not the musical notation we're used to. It's actually an old form of notation that was used by missionaries to teach, illiterate savages how to sing Christian songs. But in any case, this book, which Jim Lane had the only copy, it turns out that there were a few others floating around, but that's another story, was suddenly in our hands. We had the Songs of Freedom, we had the 1919 souvenir program, and we had the 1972 James Connolly songbook, which itself was a special item because Jim and his comrades in Cork had painstakingly assembled the most comprehensive body of Connolly's lyrics in existence anywhere. So, as far as we know, there are no other Connolly lyrics. And that became Songs of Freedom. That's what that book is. That book is a combination of these three songbooks together, which have not appeared anywhere, as I say, in almost 100 years. In the case of the two first books, Songs of Freedom itself and the 1919 souvenir program, it is actually, these are facsimiles, so you're actually seeing exactly what the books look like, including the mistakes that we don't know if Connolly himself corrected them, but somebody corrected the Songs of Freedom, typos, miscreditation, whatever. And we decided to leave it in so that people could see what it actually looks like. The font, everything else. It's really interesting because it was sponsored on the back by an eczema cream, a skin cream, was the advertisement that paid the funding for Songs of Freedom. Itchy Kill, I think it's. Anyway, so the last point I want to make before we sing some of these songs is the relevance of Connolly.
Yeah,
Itchy Kill, right? I need the Songs of Freedom. The relevance of Connolly today, or let's say the purpose of bringing this book out, was in its most basic sense to get people to read Connolly again, and not only the songs, which I are certainly part of his legacy and are very important in their own right, but what Connolly actually had to say. Now, this is particularly relevant in Ireland, where he is a national hero. He can't be completely erased, and it's, you know, he's more like held up as some sort of icon, but made harmless. In other words, they don't want to talk about his role in the Easter Rising or his revolutionary socialism, but he is in the history books. It's impossible to completely get rid of him. So we want, in that context, definitely to get people to read what Connolly said himself. That's first. Secondly, is that on an international scale and a broader level, I think it's extremely important to consider what a figure of his kind had to say from that point of view, just before an imperialist war, at a period of great turmoil within, let's say, the whole capitalist world, crises and so on and so forth, which is not so dissimilar in those respects from what we're faced with today. And when you go back to simply to a simple thing like this program of the Irish Socialist Republican Party, and I'm just reading a very quick quote from this because it's just to give an example of the quality of his thought and what its relevance is today. Object: establishment of an Irish Socialist Republic based upon the public ownership by the Irish people of the land and instruments of production, distribution, and exchange. Agriculture to be administered as a public function under boards of management elected by the agricultural population and responsible to them and to the nation at large. All other forms of labor necessary to the well-being of the community to be conducted on the same principles. Program: as a means of organizing the forces of the democracy in preparation for any struggle which may precede the realization of our ideal, or paving the way for its realization, or restricting the tide of migration by providing employment at home, and finally of palliating the evils of our present social system, we work by political means to secure the following measures. 1. Nationalization of railways and canals. 2. Abolition of private banks and money lending institutions, and establishment of state banks under popularly elected boards of directors, issuing loans at cost. 3. Establishment at public expense of rural depots for the most improved agricultural machinery to be lent out to the agricultural population at a rent covering cost and the management alone. 4. Graduated income tax on all incomes over £400 per annum in order to provide funds for pensions to the aged, infirm, and widows and orphans. 5. Legislative restrictions of hours of labor to 48 per week and establishment of a minimum wage. 6. Free maintenance for all children. 7. Gradual extension of the principle of public ownership and supply to all the necessaries of life. 8. Public control and management of national schools by boards elected by popular ballot for that purpose alone. 9. Free education up to the highest university grades. 10. Universal suffrage. And when, obviously, one compares that to what happened and the catastrophe that has confronted the Irish people, obviously these things would be a very good starting point for discussion about what the alternative actually should be. Now, it should be mentioned that Connolly considered that a limited program. That was sort of the minimum program to get started on a revolutionary path. So you can imagine all the discussion that would go into implementing this program and what it would actually mean to the current situation if this had actually been implemented at the time. And to come back to my original point is that the purpose of bringing these ideas back into the discussion is, as far as I'm concerned, obvious in terms of the current crisis that we're faced with. But to that I have to add that the reason that we did it we as musicians did it through the songs was because there's obviously a very important connection that Connolly himself repeated over and over again, which was represented by this famous quotation about the, you know, no revolutionary movement worthy of the name would have, you know, would fail to, you know, have its poetic expression. And I think the thing about that is that is two parts. One part we'll demonstrate in a minute by actually singing the songs. But the other part is actually the significance of popular song, the role of music in the struggle, the actual relationship between, you might say, theoretical or strategic thinking to organize people and the power of music or other forms of art to give this poetic expression to people. And this again is a side to Connolly that has been, in my view, forgotten in a certain sense. I mean, having read a lot about Connolly, it focuses primarily on his political agitation and so on, and not so much on the fact that in the week before the Easter Rising, they were producing a play he wrote. So obviously there was an importance or a significance. If you could be planning an insurrection at the same time staging a play in Dublin, there must be a greater significance to art than is often recognized. So with that, we will sing a few of the songs, and then perhaps, I mean, I don't know exactly how long all this is going to go. We'll have to watch the clock, but when we take the break, people can make note of their questions or thoughts that you have, and then we'll take the questions after we sing and play. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll come and join me. No, you don't have to clap. It's all right. And you can clap after we sing. Okay. Thanks, Mom. It's good to have your mom in the audience. All right. Let's go. Now, one thing you're going to notice right away is that these words are a mouthful, which is why we have to read them. Because you're going to hear. This is a song that we found in the book. There was no music, and so we wrote our own. This is called A Festive Song. Comrades, clasp hands, the time demands this night we spend enjoying. Jovial word round the festive board, grim bark and gear destroying. Liquor this night shall sparkle bright with homage paid.
The loudest, then fill the cup with liquor.
Then comrades toast great freedom's host and loudly sing her praises. And honored be all land and sea who e'er a banner raises. So ere we leave, the wreath will be the flowers of earth's best gleaning, with maid and wife, with hope of life, free from a tyrant scheming. Then fill the cup with liquor,
What's particularly interesting about that is Connolly was a teetotaler. He didn't drink. And yet he would welcome the working class filling their glasses. This is a song that was actually among the better known of his songs, or at least of his lyrics. It's quoted quite often as "We Only Want the Earth," but the actual title of the song is "Be Moderate."
Some men faint-hearted ever seek a program to return, and will insist whene'er they speak that we demand too much. 'Tis passing strange, yet I declare such statements cause me mirth. For our demands, most modest, we only want the earth. Be motherless, the timorous cry, who dreads the tyrant. You ask too much and people fly from you aghast in wonder. 'Tis passing strange and I declare such statements cause me mirth. For our demands most moderate are, we only want the earth. Amen. Godly crew whose hearts throb for the poor, their sympathy is a sure us too. If our demands were fewer, most generous souls would please observe what they enjoy from birth. Is all we ever had the nerve to ask, that is the earth. The labor back here, full of guile, such doctrine ever preaches. And whilst he bleeds the rank and file, tame moderation teaches. Yet in his despite, we'll see the day when with sword in his girth, labor shall march. For labor long with groans and tears to its oppressors melt, but never yet to aught save fears did hear of tyrant melt. We need not kneel, our cause is high, of true men there's no dearth, and our victorious rallying cry shall be, we won. Thank you.
next one is, did have music, listed as to the air of Clare's Dragoons. And Clare's Dragoons is actually an old Irish air, which has been performed in many different tempos, and you know, sometimes it's very slow, sometimes it's like a jig, very fast dance tune. But we had to find the tempo that you could sing these words to, because it's a mouthful. This is called Human Freedom. Thank you. You have to imagine the Welland pipes, the whistles, the fiddles, the boron, all the other instruments that are actually on the recording. It was a 9-piece band that played these songs with you. So the next song is was selected. The next song was selected because we wanted people who knew nothing about Connolly to get a sense of the regard in which he was held. So we selected three songs actually that were about James Connolly, and this is one of them, it's called Connolly Was There. And I should add that when I sang this in Scotland, Edinburgh and Glasgow, people particularly appreciated it because, of course, it's often forgotten that that's where he came from. This is called Connolly Was There. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Next one is actually the first song that Connolly wrote. And it was also to music that we didn't know existed. In fact, the writer of the music, the composer of the music, was a man named Derek Crawford, but we found that out much later when we got the 1919 souvenir program. This is called A Rebel Song, and it was actually not just written by Connolly, but it was passed into the voices and the hearts of the workers of Glasgow, as a matter of fact, and it was sung widely at the time. It was one of his more popular songs. It's called A Rebel Song. Come workers, sing rebel song, the song of love and hate,
of love unto the lowly and of hatred to the great.
The great trod our fathers down, or steal our children's bread.
His hand of greed he stretched to rob the living and the dead. Tyrant's might is passing with the passing of the years. We see no song of wailing, no song of sighs or tears. Hide our hopes and stout our hearts and banish all our fears. Our flag is raised above us so that all the world may see. Tis labor's faith and labor's I'm alone and labor free. With hearts aflame, with wrath against the rulers, false who wreck our manhood's name. The serf who licks his tyrant's rod, that bed full given knee. The slave who breaks his slavery's chain, a wrathful man must be. Then sing a rebel song, as we proudly slip along.
Face towards the dawn,
in trust secure in that fun thing the slave may lean upon.
The might within the arm of him, knowing freedom's worth,
strikes upon the banished tyranny from off the face of earth.
Then sing our rebel song
as we proudly sleep along.
Stick around after the break.